This is the November 26th edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Mike Zuzlow. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And Aaron Curtis joins us from Midco in Bloomington, Illinois. Commodity Week, of course, a production of Illinois Public Media. Public radio for the farming world online on demand at WILLAG.org, where today, right now, you can purchase, and don't wait, do it today, your ticket for the Farm Assets Conference. It's coming up in Bloomington at the Agri Center on the 12th day of December, just a couple of weeks away. The cost is $80, including your noon hour meal. This is different than most of the things we do. The Farm Doc team will be there, along with analysts from both the Illinois Corn and Illinois Soybean Associations, and a few others. I think the things you'll want to hear have to do with bioprocessing, hear about that is. We'll have a representative from some of the research here on campus, IBRL, the Integrated Bioprocessing Research Lab. Vijay Singh will be with us. And on the other end of that will be Premient out of Decatur, Illinois, and the IFE Proof System. They're hoping to have a corridor between Illinois, U of I, Champaign, and Decatur to develop different types of bioproducts in the future. I think you'll want to hear that. And then Scott Irwin should join us as well. He'll talk about renewable diesel, the RFS, SREs, and RINs. It should be a great day. So much more. You can find all the details online at willag.org and purchase your ticket there as well. Let's turn our attention to Commodity Week and the panelists we have with us, Mike Zuzlow and Aaron Curtis. And a bit later, we'll catch up with a third panelist from Kipler. I think you will find him of real interest. We'll introduce him as the time comes. But Mike and Aaron, let's start with you. Mike, what things should we talk about today?
Well, I think, you know, trying to blend together what happened on Wednesday, it wasn't, I don't think, all about supply-demand fundamentals and South American weather. I think there's a couple other things that have been kind of simmering in the background that maybe need to be discussed so that we can be ready for next week's trade, especially. I know we come back Friday for part of the day, but next week's trade, especially when it comes to the in case the South American weather doesn't pan out.
And Aaron Curtis on your list?
You know, we've seen futures back off of the highs, and that's really slowed down producer selling for the most part, Todd. So, you know, producer, we estimate to be about 35 to 40% sold on corn and 50, 55% sold on beans. So what should they be doing now here with, like I said, futures off the highs, and should be doing much here or be patient? So I'd like to maybe dive into that a little bit.
Now, we talked to Gray Johnson from TGM on Wednesday. I know he would be a colleague of yours through kind of the Midco relationship. He suggested that producers were needing to make some moves at this point who were on basis contracts and that they really were willing to wait it out. I'm wondering if that's across the whole of what you see in the system or not.
Yeah, so a lot of base contracts against December futures, and with first notice day on Friday, which is a little weird this week, Todd, because you got the Thanksgiving holiday and a short day, so you got to kind of pay attention a little bit this week because these holiday weeks kind of get chopped up. So a lot of decisions had to be made the last couple of days on what to do with basis contracts that were base first of the December. So I would say a large portion of them got rolled, Todd, to the March. Now, the spread weakened out here a little bit to 15 cents, actually 16 here today for a short time. So spread didn't necessarily go in the producer's favor there as we headed towards, you know, cleaning up those last few positions. But I'd say majority of them got rolled. And I think that's partly due to the fact that, you know, futures have come off their highs. I think if we were still sitting here like we were 10 days ago with futures at closer to the high, maybe a few more of those would have been priced, but we did see a lion's share of them get rolled.
And Mike Zuzlow, as you take a look at this and think about the corn market in general, producers rolling to the March make sense to you, or do they need to consider other options?
I don't think it makes a lot of sense, and it's maybe too late to really talk about this when it comes to the December. If you've not locked in, your if you've already locked in your basis, Todd, I think giving up that, as Aaron talked about, that 16 cents or 15 cents, and sometimes you have to get, you know, go another penny or two in addition in terms of the roll fee, sometimes not. I guess I would rather put that back into a futures position, i.e. A bought call that's very much in the money or right with the money, and even maybe potentially sell a call above it so that you're locking in like a 50 cent trading range. I think this is a time period where you really have to be managing the risk very, very closely, because I would say 65, 70% of the time, especially if we lose our weather market in South America, and given that we're running seven straight weeks higher in soybeans, I really like corn. I think it has more upside potential, but it needs to have help, and it doesn't need to have soybeans break it hard to the down, the beans to break hard to the downside if that would happen. And so I think when you do a paper position, you are managing it a lot better as opposed to letting it sit with the cash side. And especially if it starts to roll over on you and you take out some key support levels, most of the producers I've worked with in the past would say, well, I'm going to wait till it comes back. You don't have to worry about that with the option. So I think there's a lot to be said about taking the risk away from the cash market into the paper if you've locked in basis. Exact opposite position would be my thought. If you didn't have basis locked in, and rolling it, I think, makes some sense, because then you can pick up probably a better basis, because we're going to just get tighter and tighter and tighter in supplies. And if you don't have your basis locked in and we stay dry in either Argentina or southern Brazil, that could help us quite a bit, I think.
You keep kind of foreshadowing that weather thing coming up next week and the following week, I suppose. I'll get back to you, but Aaron, I do want to talk a little bit about looking forward. And today as well, basis clearly for corn has tightened up. Are supplies that short, or is it just that producers aren't allowing corn to move?
Yeah, I think we've had some pockets of the Midwest where things are tighter than maybe normal. You get into areas like southern Indiana where they've had some very strong basis really all fall. So there's some areas down there that are probably going to be a little tight all year just because of some production. You move a little further east where they've had some production issues. Versus maybe what they've had the last couple years. Plenty of corn out west, Kansas, Nebraska, the Dakotas. So their basis levels are weaker in comparison. And so Iowa, Illinois are kind of the transition areas between the east and the west right now. But I think a large portion of that is the fact that the farmer is kind of tightened up his selling for the most part. Once harvest is over, the decisions are being made. And really, it's hard. You know, once storage is committed to January 1st or DP rates are committed, right, sometimes it's harder to make that decision because you feel like you've already kind of paid for it to January 1st. So market would really have to rally to pull some of that grain out of storage or off a DP. And then, you know, the farmer really hasn't been too inclined yet to move a whole lot off the farm yet. I think probably comes if the weather cooperates more in Dec-Jan. But we've seen a bigger share of farmers selling across the scale, Todd, this year than we have seen the last couple of years. And I think that speaks a little bit to just the financial situation. Things are obviously tighter here after these last couple of years with these lower prices and higher input costs. So maybe a little more money in their pocket right now. Of course, still waiting to see what the government may or may not pay them here next month. That'll probably influence a few decisions, but if for the most part, I think they've sold enough, got enough money in their pocket, they're probably okay just sitting here waiting a little bit, especially with these markets off their highs. But we definitely know that the farmer is stocked full at home, both corn and soybeans. So a lot of stuff went home. There's a lot of bags around. There's a lot of full storage. So there's some marketing decisions to come, but it looks like, and barring any sort of unforeseen rally, it's going to be a pretty quiet period for a little while here.
Turn your attention, Mike Suslow, to that unforeseen rally. I suppose it's related to weather in South America?
In part. I did bring up the weather a lot, Todd, in the beginning, because I think we've pulled the weather market ahead by about 2 or 3 weeks. So my memory, while it continues to get more faulty as I get older, would suggest, you know, we really don't talk about South American weather till we get closer to the Christmas holiday. But The trade really has bid into that as of mid late last week. I think it's probably because of the U.S.-China trading deal being made, but also probably because we have issues in both major countries. And the trade's putting together the idea, and I think it's a good idea and a correct idea, that while China may not buy what they say they were going to buy on paper in terms of what they really need, because I do think there is a kind of a glut or an oversupply of many commodities in China, they probably will buy what they've committed if there's drought problems, especially in Brazil. And I think with Argentina on the table, then that, you know, introduces the corn drought potential. So we pulled the drought forward, and therefore it's a higher level of importance coming back from Thanksgiving. But I would also argue that, and we've talked about this on the closing market report the past few weeks on and off, we've had this situation where the wheat and the crude oil just continue to weaken, and they're the best candidates, and the trade's focused on them as the biggest problems with oversupply. And people are surprised when I tell them this week, that this week, our weekly low in soft red wheat was only about 30 cents away from the mid-October low, which was a four-year low. And in crude oil, we got down to 57.10. Department of Energy is giving us a 51 and a quarter average price for 2026. So we could go lower, but that 57.10 low we made this week is only about $2 a barrel from the April lows. That again was a 4 or 5 year low. And so you can see very clearly the wheat and the crude oil pressuring the market. And I think it's pinned down until midweek this week, the corn market. And several things happened very briefly. The currencies flipped, the Chinese currency strengthened, the Russian ruble strengthened. That goes to, I think, the Russian trade deal and the market thinking that Russia's got an upper hand now. We also saw some negative economic data in that we had a stronger producer price index than the trade was expecting. We also had some weak consumption data. So the trade kind of funneled into the idea, after making a new monthly high in the dollar index, we're too high in the dollar, let's sell it again, because the Federal Reserve is probably going to give us a rate cut in December. So all of a sudden, these two things that were pinning down the corn market especially kind of got off the back of the corn and allowed it to go, in my opinion, along with this weather.
Given all of that, Aaron, fundamentally on the ground, and you've told us there's an awful lot of grain that remains in the hands of producers. First, is there more than usual? I think there may be. Where is it located generally? I think you're telling me mostly at home, maybe in both places. And how does that change what you see going forward?
Well, I think it's probably going to have the largest impact probably on what we do with basis and spreads here for the most part. You know, futures are typically the third piece of that wheel or three-legged stool. So futures are usually slower to react if the farmer's a slow seller. So I think we'd continue to see basis firm up here a little bit if the farmer stays uninterested, because we still got some in the elevator. There's no doubt about that. Still does some decisions to be made there. But the question will be, when does some of this stuff off the farm start to move? Weather's going to have some impact on that. The way it looks this weekend, right? Probably not going to be too excited to get out and move much. But I think mostly it'll keep the river continue to be relatively strong. It's been relatively firm, because we've got a pretty strong export program. Would expect that to continue to carry over now into January, February, March, as some of those sales continue to roll forward into the new year. So I think the river continues to stay somewhat stout historically. We've got fairly decent southeast rail bids because we continue to see that pull to the southeast based on, you know, some lower crops in Indiana, Ohio, and Michigan. And then on the opposite side of that basis, far west probably stays weaker in comparison. So as we look at where grain flows this year, it looks like it's there's probably not going to be a lot of eastern corn that goes west this year, which has been a little bit of the case the last 2 or 3 years. So that makes Illinois obviously an interesting play here from the basis side. But overall, I think the river stays fairly firm. Southeast rail continues to pull some grain that direction. So if the farmer continues to stay somewhat uninterested, probably more of a function of keeping basis somewhat firm because, you know, ethanol margins have been good all fall. Ethanol crush has been strong. Soybean crushes, obviously, it continues to see records due to the expansion. So the domestic usage continues to be a positive story. And if the farmer doesn't continue to feed that usage on a consistent space, on a consistent basis, then basis continues to have to do a little work. So I think that's where we'll see a lot of the movement if the farmer stays uninterested. Because we have to look back to what happened last year, just as a reminder, from mid-December to mid-February, the farmer sold about 50% of their crop. And we saw basis kind of fall apart there in January, early February, and the spreads widened. So if we don't see that kind of action this year, I think we will see basis continue to hang in there and spreads try to stay on the firmish side, Todd.
Yeah, by that you mean you don't see the sales, correct?
Yeah, we don't see the producer selling as much, right? And I still think, you know, you look at a 15 cents off the high or where we're at today, I think that has a lot to do with it, right? I think their next sale wants to be a better sale than the last one they made. So if we stay below those levels, I think it stays slow because there used to be an old adage, Todd, back in the old days, because I'm kind of old right now, but you know, where you'd buy more grain on down days, right? Because you know, when the market was going higher, producer didn't want to miss out. Down days would cause a little more sell. We just don't see that anymore. Down days, it's Deadsville. And that's what the case has been here this fall when we have some down days and we pulled off the highs. Farmer selling just slows completely up.
Mike, he mentioned in the Southeast that there was a draw there, that, and we know that their yields were not as good. I'm wondering, when you look forward to the USDA January report and the yield survey that they are taking now or will be in December of farmers, what you think that they will find and how producers ought to use that data.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up because, you know, Aaron brings up a lot of really good points and just the two quick points that he made that need to be reinforced for the listener, I think, from my desk is your basis could be a make or break situation this year in profitability. Last year at this time, in other words, we're about the same price as we were last year at this time here in Atchison, around 440 for cash corn. That's about 30 plus cents off the lows, Todd. And between the middle of November to early February, we jumped and had about 4 days where we went into the mid fives because of some of the local things that were going on, plus the support of the overall market. But it happened quick and it was over quick. And I think this is extremely important to kind of replicate the idea of how high of priority you need to make that basis in the next 60 days. So that goes to your question. If we looked at corn between now and the January crop report, what will we know or feel like we know that the market has to contend with? We'll probably know about the South American weather. We'll probably know whether the yield is close to my 182, 182 and a half, and we'll probably know how bad Ukraine is. That was one of the key things that I was talking about. It was simmering in the Baltic. We're near a 2-year high on the Baltic index right now. Doesn't look like it's because of iron ore or anything like that. It looks like it's grains. Russia says they want to get rid of the Black Sea grain deal on Wednesday. And all of a sudden, we're hearing now from the Ukrainians, hey, look, our seaport loadouts are running 6 weeks instead of two. That's why our exports are down 50% both October and now November. And December looks to be the same versus those 3 months last year. There's a lot coming together for corn, and I'm talking about corn in a vacuum right now, but that's why I go back to the soybeans and that 7 week higher, straight 7 week higher gap below us on the weekly chart. What could derail me from getting a really nice opportunity to sell into the January report? Because it's starting to look that way to me right now. And obviously, South American weather is a big deal because, again, I'll reiterate, that's probably where China will make the decision whether they want to buy a lot from us or not.
So you pin this on what you know about the Baltic Sea freight rates, correct?
And what the Ukrainian government themselves said this week, and that Putin and Russia said, we don't need this Black Sea grain deal anymore. It just seemed to me that several things came together that suggested there may not be the supply there from Ukraine as what the third largest corn exporter in the world. that we have been used to during this war. That's just, it's just something on my list, kind of like the 3 million metric ton ending stocks reduction that USDA did for China for 25-26. That's on my list.
And when you look at that one on your list, what does it tell you about the marketplace?
Not a lot. They did some of the beginning stocks, but they really didn't do much on the other supply demand baseline numbers. But I remember, and maybe Aaron can chime in on this, that and give a viewpoint, even if it's opposing. I remember some areas had a lot of hot, dry weather. A lot of areas had a lot of super flooding weather as well during the growing season in different parts.
Yeah, I kind of remember it the same way. It's what Mike said. So we'll see where it kind of comes together here as we learn more information. But don't have anything different to what Mike said.
Yeah, so the thing we'll have to watch is to see, China is generally not into the corn market. They are when they need to be because of their need and want to be self-sufficient, I suppose. So we'll have to watch that. I suppose time to get a final word from each of you before we talk to the folks at Kipler. And we'll begin, Mike Suslow, with you.
I think the big thing to this market has shown me over the last few months, Todd, is the funds have stayed absent the long side and looks like by the new COT data have maybe even added to their net shorts in corn in an environment when the world stocks to use levels are at their lowest since 2012. And I wake up every day saying, why aren't we trading 60, 70 cents higher in corn? Well, it's because corn doesn't live in a vacuum. And that vacuum includes crude oil and wheat especially. And so that's really, for me, the next 3 weeks, that's really a big deal along with South American weather.
And Aaron Curtis, your final word for the day?
Todd, I still got a little friendly bias to corn. I still think there's some upside there. I think we got to keep in mind, though, what levels kind of engage the farmer again, because that's going to have some impact on what we see with basis and probably limit the upside a little bit. I think that's probably somewhere closer to that 475 area in March corn. So 20, 30 cents higher is probably going to engage the farmer again. So I'd keep that in mind here if this market does bounce a little bit. But overall, I think there's some decent support underneath the corn market as we move into the winter.
Aaron Curtis is with Midco in Bloomington, Illinois. Mike Zuzlow is at globalcomresearch.com. He's out of Atchison, Kansas. Matt Dara now joins us from the United Kingdom. He is with Kipler. To remind you, we've talked to a few folks from Kipler from time to time, from Dubai and other places. They are a transportation and freight company, intelligence that is, that is following those sorts of things and how global commodities move across the planet. Now, Matt specializes, I believe, in commodity markets, corn, soybeans, and wheat. Hi, Matt. Thank you for being with us. Where in the United Kingdom are you?
So I'm based in England, in the West Midlands, so fairly central, in amongst most of our arable production.
Okay. Well, how did the growing season there go? We don't talk very much about the United Kingdom, but just out of interest, how did the growing season last summer go?
Relatively favorable, I think. On the whole, more favorable than we had perhaps 2 years ago and the year before, I'd say. Generally benign weather conditions across the board, which has really helped to establish our wheat crop. We are expecting to see a little bit of a contraction on our sort of barley area, but I think wheat is still very much in the rotation, and we perhaps might be seeing a larger oilseed rape area as well this year. But on the whole, generally growing conditions have been favorable so far as we head into dormancy.
Remind me what it is Kipler does and why.
Of course, yeah. So Kipler is mostly a cargo tracking company. So we provide real-time information with regard to the volume of cargoes tracked across a number of commodity markets, from major exporters to major importers. And this can give users a real-time understanding of exports across a number of commodities that covers energy and dry bulk commodities such as grains and oilseeds. And then also there's a second vertical there, which is the insights package. So alongside the cargo tracking side of things, We also offer research analyst, which some users find useful in regards to understanding the context behind why we're seeing those cargo flows.
And I suppose this is where the intersection comes between freight and what you do as it relates to commodities such as corn, soybeans, and wheat?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely that. So we can help users understand why we're seeing the volume of Brazilian soybeans head to China and why we might not be seeing the same kind of volume from a seasonality point of view of US soybeans to China.
Well, what did you tell them early on about this?
Yes, so it's a good place to start, I suppose. We started out the year when we, back in April, when we saw that kind of sort of breakdown in favorable trade ties between the US and China. At the start of the year, we were quite pessimistic with regards to US soybean exports to China. In fact, we were one of the first research analysts to put out our estimate for, we were one of the first research analysts to forecast zero US soybeans to China for the 25-26 trade year, which obviously is quite, at the time, we were looking quite far ahead there. But when we looked at the fundamentals, we saw that we had this huge South American soybean crop coming online. And we didn't see China necessarily requiring US soybeans in 25-26 off the back of the supply it already had available, and also taking into account its current reserves. Of course, present day, we are now seeing US soybeans be purchased by China, and we've adjusted our forecasts accordingly. But we're still quite hesitant with regard to whether that 12 million ton sales commitment will be reached. Of course, this is what the US has put out there, but it's yet to be acknowledged by China. And of course, I appreciate there's a number of analysts in the market there who are doing the numbers here, but we're at, so what, 4 weeks have passed since we had that meeting between the US and China in South Korea, where we heard of this 12 million ton quote, because the commitment be announced. And of course, I think we're just over 2 million tons. So we're somewhere around a quarter of that commitment being reached. But we only have 5 weeks left until the end of the calendar year, of which is when China was meant to have reached that 12 million ton commitment. So there's a little bit of concern in the market there that this commitment won't be met. And this is something that we are suggesting to our clients, is that we don't think it will be reached. And we're concerned about the impact this is having on the 2026 soy-corn ratio, because at the moment there's a signal there. I think I was looking at the ratio earlier today, we're about 2.4. So it's moving more towards, from where it was a few months ago, it's moving more towards soybean planting. But this is off the back of assuming we reach that commitment from China to the purchases of soybeans. So there's a danger there that if China doesn't purchase the soybeans that it's supposedly committed to, that the US will produce a larger soybean crop, and come 2026, they'll be requiring, might be again on the phone to China asking for more soybean sales.
There are a couple of questions I have for some clarification's sake. As you talk about the marketing year of 25-26, do you think that China will make the total 12 million metric tons for the full marketing year as opposed to by the end of the calendar year, or using a different number for the marketing year?
We don't see China reaching 12 million tons for the full marketing year. So for 25-26, our current estimate is below 12 million tons, and we may revise this even lower depending on how we see things develop in the coming weeks. And just for further context, for 26-27, we still are a little bit unsure as to whether that 25. I appreciate the 25 million ton commitment was a calendar year, but we're still unsure that we'll see 25 million tons of US soybean exports to China in 26-27 as well.
Okay, so given that set of numbers and the ratio that has changed because the price of soybeans has outpaced on the commodity markets at the CME Group the rise in the price of corn, what are you telling your end users as it's related to the intelligence and where the market might be headed?
We're sort of informing our users that the US corn export campaign will be very important. Of course, in the sense of we're off the back of a very strong export campaign at the moment, and we're still expecting this to continue. And also, the strength of this export campaign is very key with regards to where this will see corn ending stocks come the end of the 25-26 marketing year. And if we don't see an improvement with regards to US soybean exports to China, therefore we might see greater corn planting. And as a result, or we may see corn acreage staying at historically high levels, which could lead us to a continued supply pressure with the US corn market. For the US soybean market, we're informing our clients that we are seeing very elevated crush demand in the US. And off the back of this, we're seeing a greater a domestic supply of US soybean oil and soybean meal. And as a result, that's why we're seeing that weakness in the soybean meal market. Of course, it's improved in recent weeks off the back of increased US soybean sales to China. But nonetheless, historically, that the CBOT soy meal market is still relatively weak. And as a result, we are seeing elevated competition globally for the soybean meal market.
How do you see other nations coming into the marketplace for US soybeans? And will they be able to pick up the slack in exports that you do not see going to China?
Yeah, so this is the concern that we have. It's definitely another point that we've been illustrating to clients is that when you look at monthly import volumes by destination, China accounts for about 60% of global demand. So therefore, by month, China accounts for more imports than all other nations globally. So the danger there is that the US soybean price has increased off the back of increased Chinese demand. It has now begun losing that demand from alternate export markets. So the likes of Taiwan, Egypt, the Southeast Asia and North Africa is where we see some of these countries pivoting back towards Brazil. And as a result, the US soybean export campaign could be in a worse position, because what's happened is Brazil FOB market has begun pricing below the likes of US. And this discount to US origin will only widen once we see that 26 crop come online around February time. So the window for US soybean exports to perhaps dominate the export campaign, the window is narrowing. And the US could actually be in a worse position if this demand from China is not realized, as it's also lost demand from alternate export markets too.
Let me see if I can summarize that correctly. So what you're suggesting is that because China was willing to come into the United States market at a higher price, above what they could actually purchase out of Brazil, make purchases which all were intertwined with the higher price, it priced other nations, which would have been turning to the United States at this point to look elsewhere, potentially buy from Brazil. And that in total, if China does not buy from the United States, will reduce even more fully the number of soybeans that are exported out of the U.S.
Yes, exactly that, Todd. Yeah, and that's the concern that we have currently for the U.S. soybean export campaign for 25-26.
What kind of number then, in that case, are you using for the 25-26 marketing year for soybean exports from the United States in total?
We're around 10 million tons at the moment. In our monthly, we produce monthly balance sheets. So when we published our November balance sheets, we increased our U.S. soybean export U.S. soybean exports for 25-26 by 3.2 million tons. So obviously we factored in that increased demand from China, but obviously we've lost demand from alternate origins, which we've already mentioned. So we're around that sort of 10 million ton figure. But if we don't see much an improvement in Chinese demand in the coming weeks with regards to US soybean sales, we're looking to perhaps drop this lower, we're looking to drop this lower, and we'll also need to factor in our forecast with regards to where we see US soybean prices. If we can look to see if we might see more demand from the likes of Mexico or Southeast Asia for US soybeans.
So consequently, when you were talking about the 2.4 to 1 ratio, you expect that to change and for more corn acres potentially to be sown in the United States and show up in the March USDA report, I suppose?
It's definitely a watch point going forwards. We do expect soybean acres to rise year on year at the moment under current fundamentals. But the concern we have in the market, the concern that we're telling to our users, is that if soybean acres rise beyond, if soybean acres rise too much, we may find ourselves in a position of greater US soybean supply. And off the back of an absence of Chinese demand, I think that's the concern that we have at the moment. So we do think in our balance sheets, we do expect US soybean acres to rise year on year for 2026. The concern is just that to what extent? Because if we don't see if that Chinese demand isn't realized, but the market is pricing as if it will happen, this could lead to a greater than necessary soybean acreage expansion, and therefore lead to a greater supply of US soybeans on the market, and lead to a concerning situation in regards to stocks at the turn of the 26-27 marketing year for US.
I'd like to turn your attention to freight and longer term functions. I know that you have been following, particularly the Belt and Road Initiative China has underway, and the port that it is putting on the western side of South America so that soybeans can be shipped out of Brazil, I think through Peru. How might that change the global picture once that port opens, in your opinion?
In our opinion, I think it would have obviously accelerate soybean exports from Brazil to it would obviously accelerate Brazilian soybean exports to China, and obviously give Brazil a greater advantage to access Chinese demand in the sense of having a tighter window. And I think I'm not too close in the freight market, but I think I would only be able to sort of acknowledge that we would obviously see a smaller window of time for Brazilian soybeans to reach China. And obviously what this could in theory do is usually the US soybean export campaign to China peaks around the time around sort of Q4, Q1 of the calendar year. But if we have a shorter time frame that's required for Brazilian soybeans to be harvested and sent to China, this could narrow the window that the US has to access Chinese demand in a year of lesser Brazilian supply.
That would be an interesting function and drive US soybean exports lower at that point, just closing the window in which the United States might be able to export its soybeans. In the United States, domestic crush, as you know and mentioned earlier, is really on a rip snorter this year. Is that sustainable in your opinion? And will there be demand for bean oil outside of the United States and inside the United States? And how do you see the meal market reacting?
I think we still forecast quite a high utilization for US domestic crush off the back of generally quite obviously very ample supply. And I think for the bean oil market, of course, we're still waiting to hear about the from the EPA regarding the reallocation of SREs, which is a key watch point with regards to how that shapes soybean oil demand going forwards. But obviously, it is leading to downward pressure on the meal market. We did forecast that crush demand would rise in the US earlier this year off the back of those more favorable biofuel policies. But we did acknowledge that obviously this would lead to a greater availability of meal within the US and ultimately leading it quite dependent on a strong export market. Now, this has been challenged by the global situation, of course, where we have a good fundamental, an ample fundamental supply of meal across other key major exporters, the likes of Brazil and Argentina. And it's also worth mentioning that off the rather elevated imports of Chinese soybeans, so we recently had Chinese customs for October, and we've had the sixth consecutive month of higher, of record high month for the month of soybean imports. And as a result, this is driving crush in China. And as a result, they have almost a much greater supply of soybean oil themselves, which is being exported to export markets, which will take, with one of which is India, where we're seeing elevated Chinese soybean oil exports to India. So as a result of elevated Chinese soybean oil demand, we're seeing that India may not be as present in regard to importing soybean oil from other key export origins, such as Argentina or Brazil, in light of greater supply from China. So there is that challenge there that with regards to how well the US can there is the challenge there with regards to soybean oil values off the back of a very well supplied global market.
Matt Darrow is a grains and oilseeds analyst with Kipler. He's based in the United Kingdom. You've been listening to Commodity Week from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like. You can do that on our website at willag.org, along with signing up for our winter meeting season. It starts with the Farm Assets Conference on December the 12th, followed up by the Illinois Farm Economics Summits. The FarmDoc team will be on the road. We'll hope you join us. You can do that by getting registered today at willag.org. Our thanks again go to our panelists for today, including Matt Darrow, Mike Zuslow, and Aaron Curtis. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.